This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. This is the New World Report, and we're looking now at a general theme touched on recently by a column in the Wall Street Journal editorial page by Mary Anastasia O'Grady about Russia in the New World. There's been talk over these weeks of Ukraine crisis that representatives of the foreign ministry in Moscow have pointed to perhaps the irony, perhaps the symmetry of staging or deploying Russian military forces into the New World, such as Havana and Caracas. Those two capitals are mentioned. There are others to take into consideration. The irony is they're already here and have been here for quite some time. The end of the Soviet Union was a bump, but not a discontinuity. Professor, I come to this subject learning from where Russia has been welcome and also from the cynical point of view that Russia has the ability to do this. However, at this point, it's just talk, except there's said to be a mission in Managua, Nicaragua. There's certainly lengthy legacy from Havana, from the Castro regime, which isn't very far behind us. And Caracas, Maduro has made many trips to Moscow, has talked very favorably of his Russian relationships, and then not to leave out Bolivia. So what is the present opinion by the U.S. about Russia in the New World? Is it old news or is there fresh concern?
Well, certainly a couple weeks ago when Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Rybakov alluded to the possibility that Russia could deploy military forces to Venezuela or Cuba, I think it was meant to draw attention. But again, Jake Sullivan called it, I believe, bluster was his exact words. And that's largely true for a number of reasons. One, Russia, as you alluded to, has a repeated pattern of basically deploying limited forces to the region anytime they want to offset their concerns over U.S. actions in their near abroad. We saw this in 2008 during the crisis in Georgia with South Ossetia and Abkhazia. We saw this again with the heating up of the Ukraine crisis in the Donbass in 2013. We saw it again in 2019. And frankly, we're seeing it now. It is interesting, of course, his eyes are fixed on what the Russians are doing in the Ukraine to see the Russians do these maneuvers. But as you also alluded to, Russia has long had limited presence in a series of anti-U.S. partners. Of course, since 2007, the Ortega regime, as they came back, Russia has deployed a limited number of things in Nicaragua, principally tanks and other military vehicles, a satellite downlink station for its GLONASS, a facility for the Russian counter-drug agency, FSKN, among other things. And of course, Nicaragua has always been there to receive Russian equipment. As you also alluded to, Venezuela in recent years has been an even bigger Russian partner. It bought, when the Venezuelans had money, they bought about $11.5 billion worth of Russian military equipment, Sukhoi 30s, Mi-35 attack helicopters, Mi-17 transport helicopters, a range of different armored vehicles. But in more recent years, the Russians had shifted to a posture of doing other less expensive things, like trying to help the Venezuelans get their air defense system, the Russian SA-300 system up and working, bringing in a number of different essentially mercenary troops, the Wagner group, to protect Maduro and to do other training type of activities. And so there's been a limited collection there. Ironically, the Bolivians have long talked about working with the Russians, but have always had a difficult relationship. The Bolivians have talked about buying Mi-17s and an Antonov 124 aircraft, but almost all of that under Evo Morales fell through. Perhaps the two of the most interesting chapters in just recent days, number one, actually is that when Argentine President Alberto Fernandez went over on a trip to Russia to meet with Putin and then China, and really grabbed headlines internationally when he openly offered, in apparently off-the-cuff, off-script remarks, Argentina as a vehicle by which Russia could expand its presence in the region, and reciprocally that Russia could help Argentina to offset, literally, said offset its dependence on the United States in the International Monetary Fund. The other big news that you also alluded to was, and we've long known that the Russians had contributed to Venezuelan air defense systems and they had people in the border region, but the Russian The Colombian Defense Minister Diego Molano actually in public remarks noted the Russian and Iranian roles in helping the Venezuelans to mobilize troops towards the Colombian border. That led to a meeting between the Colombian Foreign Minister Marta Luz Ramirez, Minister Molano, and I believe President Duque was involved, basically calling the Russians to account on what they were doing, helping the Venezuelans. But again, it all highlights that there is, although a limited Russian role and probably one that's not going to expand greatly because the Russians just don't have the money for that right now in the midst of a war with Ukraine, but the way in which key left of center actors do pose a threat through Russia in the hemisphere.
We come to that remark about Russia and Venezuela threatening Colombia. This is Reuters in these last days. Russia has promised that military equipment given to Venezuela will not be used to attack Colombia, destabilize Latin America, or end up in the hands of illegal armed groups. This, according to Colombia's foreign minister and vice president of Colombia as well. The puzzle there, Professor, as you know, is the word promise and the word will not end up in. You understand, we're looking at a flow of weaponry. It would be impossible for even good intentions to keep track of it. We're also looking at a technology that augments weaponry, such as drones or unarmed vehicles, but nonetheless drones with communication tools and towers that communicate along the river and are manufactured or the possession of Russia. We also have reason to believe that Russia has a very large embassy in some fashion in Managua. To what end? Surveillance, perhaps the Ortegas use it. But in any event, there's lots of technology that isn't arms that augments a dictatorial regimes with predation on their minds. So are you struck by the fact that Russia is even talking about making promises like this, given what you'd have to say, this is a low point in trust with the Kremlin around the world?
Well, I mean, this is relatively typical, sadly, of the Russians. I mean, we have to remember that, the remarks by their ambassador, Tarumadze, there in Colombia, you know, has to be interpreted in the context of Vladimir Putin's assurances that his 120,000 troops massed on the Ukrainian border are not intended to invade the Ukraine, even though you have Russian affiliated forces there in the Donbass inside the Ukraine, even now. And so, what's a promise worth in that context? And the Colombians certainly know that whether the Russians say that they will or will not allow something to be used, the Russian and Russian trained Sukhoi 30s could basically reach the defense ministry building in Bogota, relatively rapidly and do some serious damage in Colombia, as well as Russian armor, the T-72s, the BMPs and BTRs could come across La Guajira and cause a lot of problems relatively quickly if Maduro and the Venezuelans decide to do so. So the Colombians have absolutely realistic reasons to be concerned about what's going on with the Russians on the frontier, in my judgment. But as you also alluded to, one of the things that the Russians have also done is they've been involved throughout the region in information warfare operations, not only propaganda through their official channels such as Russia, RT and Sputnik, but also through social media bots and trolls. And generally, it's about augmenting extremism to foment instability in essentially, pro-U.S. actors in the region to create strategic space for Russia more than it is to try to push a pro-Russian line. Again, it's there have been a number of reasons for U.S.-aligned and democratic regimes to have some concern about what's going on with Russia. And as you also pointed out, certainly there are ways in which Russia, through that training, through its weapons, through information capabilities, and through information operations, has also helped to keep in power its friendly regimes, authoritarian regimes in the hemisphere.
I ask a question that isn't written down yet because it's speculation, but there are two big elections this year. First, Colombia president, well, legislative, then presidential, and then Brazil's presidential. In both places, the leading candidate is understood as left of center. Is there any reason to believe that Russia has inroads in Brazil or inroads in Colombia to match the left of center remarks?
Generally, the greater concern in terms of intelligence operatives in the hemisphere, is with the Cubans. The Russians probably have some presence, although it may be less extensive than the networks that the Cubans have in the hemisphere. Having said that, however, both in terms of the social media space and other things, it is highly likely that the Russians will be trying to influence those elections in some way. And certainly, if former ELN guerrilla Gustavo Petro does win in Colombia, and I don't think that's a done deal yet, that would have significant negative impact for the United States and open up a lot of doors for, Cuban, Russian, Venezuelan, other interests. In the same way, if the PT with Lula da Silva comes back in Brazil, especially a more communist-oriented, radicalized Lula da Silva, that would really significantly reverse the posture of a country that is half the population, half of the economy of South America, with a military that is bigger than all of the rest of the militaries in the region put together. And so Russia does definitely have a lot of interest in certain outcomes in both of those elections.
So while we can say right now it's not probable, it's possible that Russia could find inroads in Brazil and Colombia after these elections. I'm trying to be general, Professor, because I don't want to be alarmist. I'm just looking about how Russia doesn't spend much money to wage a campaign of influence peddling.
Absolutely. Again, I can't offer hard evidence on this program, but it's the Russian way of operating that I think we can expect that they're probably doing things in the information space through RT and Sputnik to influence those elections at the margin, push certain things, push misinformation, things of that nature, with the hopes of increasing polarization and increasing the likely outcome that would be to their favor. And again, they definitely have significant upsides if Petro comes in Colombia, and significant upsides if Lula comes back in Brazil.
I'm speaking to Professor Evan Ellis, the Latin American research professor at the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We turn now to an ongoing tragedy in the New World, Haiti. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.